Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got all kinds of stuff to get into. The Baseball Hall of Fame. Are you outraged, Jared, at what happened? Do you not mind? We'll find out as some big names went off the ballot yesterday as their 10th try. Did not net them a Hall of Fame appearance, so now it's the Veterans Committee for those folks. Another big name, his first try, he's out, but one guy did make it, and we'll tell you who that was. NFL football. Trammell wrote an article. It's something that I've been thinking about the last couple of days, and then he wrote this yesterday, and he's talking about, and I've had this question on my mind since that ridiculous game between the Chiefs and the Bills. Is the AFC poised to go on a run like we saw the NFC from 81 to 96. So from 81 to 96, the NFC won 15 of the 16 Super Bowls with only the 83 Raiders winning. And the reason I say that is because of the youth and superstar ability of at the quarterback spot in the AFC versus the old men walking around with canes in the NFC. The discrepancy is huge. There's only two, but there are two guys that have an opportunity to take the NFC by the horns. With youth, two franchises that have that chance because of the youth at quarterback. We'll talk about that. Sean Payton out in New Orleans. Is it Dallas? Or is he just not going to do anything? Is he going to be a TV man for a year or so as he recharges his batteries?
Or a movie star.
Or maybe a movie star. Whatever he wants to do, I guess. Then we'll hit the high school hoops from last night. Two enjoyable, interesting games at the Pioneer Center between Elk City and Sayre. That rivalry back at it for the first time since 2009. Then there was a lot of small school hoops action around the area. Plus, yesterday was kind of like Christmas Eve, right, in the small school, high school basketball world. We knew where everybody was going. Now we know where they'll play. Brackets have been released by the OSSAA, so we can give you times, dates for high school basketball playoff action, which will tip off, unbelievably, 2 weeks from Friday. Crazy
that
to think.
That is crazy.
Crazy to think we're already there. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Plus, hey, by the way, Caleb Williams news. I'm sure everybody's pumped up to hear about that. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, stay in touch with the show a couple ways. KADSAM.com. You can download or you can live stream there. Or you can download the Paragon Communications app right on your phone. Boom, it's free. Penny News in the app. Three radio stations in the app. Big L TV, Paragon TV. Right there at your fingertips in that app. It's the easiest way to digest everything we do. We've also got the Skinny on Sports podcast, KADSAM.com, and also iTunes. iTunes, you can subscribe, and you will be alerted when a new podcast drops. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
I am fine. Yeah, Drew's. Have you heard the new Kid Rock, We the People song?
No, but I love the title of his new tour. Have you heard what he's calling his new tour? That's what he's calling it.
What?
The Super Spreader Tour.
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday. I did see that yesterday. I have heard.
I can only imagine. Yeah, we can't play that on air.
No. I've seen some lyrics from this song, and it is, I'm going to say, not complimentary of the president.
Oh, well.
It's basically yelling obscenities at him. And then also a little Let's Go Brandon in there, mixed in all together.
Oh, okay.
So it's very, very interesting. Yeah, Drew's right about one thing. We cannot play that one on the air, just firing it out there. Or Fauci, yeah, he's mad about everybody in that song, like a lot of us here are. You were in Canute last night, Fort Cobb-Broxton coming to town. You know, it's interesting because it feels like in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, we never really saw Fort Cobb in the regular season around here. It was always playoffs, right? But it feels like here over the last few years, you're starting to see them play home and homes with some different teams. Canute, this year was three of the Paragon schools anyway, with Arapahoe, Canute, Merritt, and then also the Elks played them in the Hinton tournament. So we're starting to see more of the Fort Cobb Mustangs and Lady Mustangs in the regular season that we didn't really see 5 to 10 years ago. It was all just simply playoffs because of the scheduling. But now they're kind of coming out west a little bit more often. They were here at Canute last night. What happened?
Starting with the girls, it was senior night, and a junior stood out. No shocker. Kylie Smith had 29, and she was on pace to, I would say, almost hit 40 if Coach Ridley hadn't pulled her out. I'm seeing some sneaky cool stuff from her. She's adding to her game, and I don't know if I want to bring it to air. She's just able to dissect the defense. But Canute started a little slow because Coach Rogers, Jana Rogers over there at Fort Cobb, her first year there, I think it starts with defense because their defense at his own defense, they're very tall and very long. So it took a little bit for Canute to kind of shoot over that, to kind of loosen it up and to get it into transition. You know, a missed shot, offensive rebound, you got those opportunities there on his own defense. But, you know, and it was 10-9 after the first quarter. But once Canute figured that out, they went on a 21-3 run in the second quarter to pull away and never look back. So it was very businesslike. You know, I know Fort Cobb coming in struggling. They're now 8-13 after last night. And on the other hand, on the other side, Canute, I was kind of questioning this before the game started, was, you know, they went 2-1 in the West Central Constellation Champions. They had that tough game against Sentinel that they had to grind out to win late in the fourth quarter. There's always, you know, we always say this, there's always a turning point for a team in a season. You know, whether that be a deep playoff run or a state tournament appearance or even a state championship, could that Sentinel game, with how Canute was able to weather that storm and win a close one, could that have been the turning point for them to go on a little bit of a run here? We got three more games for the regular season after this, and go on a run in the playoffs. They got a tough draw in the playoffs, but, you know, they got a good coach and they got some talented pieces around them. So I'm anxious to see if that can continue. They go to Granite on Friday night, at Hammond on next Tuesday, which is always a tough one, and then a long road trip to Billings, which on paper looks like could be an easy win, but you never know with those long road trips against unfamiliar teams. On the boys' game, man, Fort Cobb can shoot. They can absolutely tear up the net. You had, I believe his name was Simon or Simeon?
Simeon Collins, I think. Simeon Collins. Just off the top of mind.
Yeah, he had 18 points, all from three-point land, man. This kid could not miss. Cray Rogers, a sophomore, keep an eye on that kid and that name right there. He silky smooth with the basketball, how he handles it. A high percentage shooter, if that makes sense. Not necessarily all from, you know, he hit a couple of threes, but how he's able to, again, dissect the defense and get himself closer to the bucket for a higher percentage shot. I mean, he only had 4 first half points, but really broke it down in the third and fourth quarter, finished with 18. 19 points for Ian Taylor. I remember him from last year as a sophomore. In those playoff games against Canute, there's that classic one over in Burns Flat that came down to the wire. Then they blew out Canute in the area tournament, and he can shoot too. Just very confident shooter. He had 19, 12 points for Jackson Willits. I mean, they're a good squad, and Fort Cobb, you know, everyone might look at them and go, well, they were maybe a little down last year, you know, but that was last year with a bunch of a couple seniors that are gone, but this year, Coach Hines started 4 juniors and a sophomore. If they can get going this year, you know, that could really set up something, not just for this year, but for next year, even the next couple of years, because, of course, as always, Fort Cobb is going to have a deep bench and very talented players, and, of course, they're always going to be well coached. So, final score, by the way, and that was 82-45. The girls, Canute girls, won 63-35.
So, yeah.
Split for senior night for Canute. One team, again, I think, could they be turning the corner as the Canute girls? The other team, the guys, I mean, they're going to be tough. They got to figure out how to get the bucket through the hoop. more often than not. They're getting good looks. They're just not making their shots.
Yeah, and that, you go in those times like that during seasons where shots don't go in and you lose.
And you can't do that against a team like Fort Cobb. And that's what happened. The first quarter, it started out, they were just trading buckets. And then when Canute went cold, Fort Cobb continued to hit shots, and they just piled it on and didn't look back.
Elsewhere in the small schools, I thought this was just a little bit of a surprise to me that Arapahoe Butler was able to knock off Merritt on the girls' side, 40-39. So a good win there for Coach Edelin. That's a team you like a lot, both Arapahoe teams you like a lot, and to make the state tournament coming up. So that's a good win for Coach Edelin to knock off Merritt. That's now two straight losses for the Oilerettes, dating back to Saturday night against Sealing, which no surprise there. Sealing is one of the best teams in the state. But the Oilerettes fall to Arapahoe Butler. Not a good time for losses for Merritt, because this is the last week that games count in four playoff pairings. Those rankings lock in next Monday, and the pairings will be released in 2A through 4A a week from Friday. So not a good time to not earn that win against a ranked team in Class A if you're the Merritt Oilerettes. The Oilers fell as well to Arapahoe Butler, 62-43. Both Cheyenne teams went to Fargo Gage Fort Supply and won, 46-33 on the girls' side. I never found a boys' score. Shattuck knocked off Leedy twice, 74-33 in the girls' game, 63-49 in the boys'. No, Shattuck, their boys are rolling out of the Christmas break. They won their own shootout this last weekend. Now they knock off Leedy to start the week, 63-49. I was here with Sayre in town. Two good games as the Lady Eagles knock off the Elkettes 44-41. Elk City got 18 for freshman Abby Brown. Sayre had two in double figures. Emily Easter, the sophomore, had 15. Maddie Speaker, 14. The game was won at the free throw line for Sayre. They were fantastic at the stripe, 24 out of 29. So when you look up, they've got 24 of their points from the free throw stripe on only 29 attempts. Great free throw shooting. I think they were 12 of 15 in the fourth quarter. They only had one bucket. Easter made a bucket with like 2 minutes left to make the lead back out to three after the Elkettes had cut it to one. But good, solid free throw shooting down the stretch was able to keep the Elkettes at bay. Elk City just couldn't generate offense consistently enough. Outside of Brown, nobody else had more than six, I think. Not a good night offensively for the Elkettes. They never could solve the zone that Sayre was running. It was really extended at the top with Easter kind of the point of that zone, out kind of in between the rings, making the Elkettes initiate offense 4 or 5 steps behind the three-point line instead of right up there close to it. So not a good night offensively for Elk City. They got to figure some things out with Blanchard coming to town Friday. Then in the boys' game, the Elks dominated for most of it. And then all of a sudden, Sayre came roaring back in the fourth quarter. Both Walker Moeller, Camden Richardson were in double figures. Camden had 9 of his 11 in the fourth quarter. He's just a freshman. Coach Richards, one of his twin sons. He was big down the stretch because Sayre needed somebody besides Moeller.
Coach Richardson, one of his sons, now in high school?
Both twins are freshmen.
Okay, thanks for the
– Camden and Braden
thanks
both.
Thanks for making me feel old.
He was huge down the stretch. He made a couple of threes in the fourth quarter. Sayre did a good job making free throws for the most part outside of the very end. And then the end was it was a wild ending. I think the Elks led by 10 going into the fourth. Sayre outscored them. It was 21 to 12. In the fourth quarter, Clayton Mossberg Jr. got fouled with 5.7 seconds left, down one. He missed both free throws, and then Sayre didn't have a timeout. And they kind of panicked, and they didn't do anything, and the 5 seconds ran off the clock before they realized they needed to foul to get the ball back. I think it was actually Camden Richardson that it popped in his mind, oh, my gosh, we got a foul, and then it was too late. In the game, the buzzer sounded. So the Elks escape 47-46. Joseph Daly was awesome in the second quarter. 10 of his 12 came in that quarter, and he was just able to dominate the paint. The Elks got Mossberg in foul trouble. He's 6'6 type guy, long, lanky. Got him in foul trouble in the first half, and Joseph dominated while he was out. When he got him back in, it was a little bit different. He was able to kind of keep Big Joe off the boards. But Dunlap continues to shoot it well. Caden Dunlap had 13. He made a big one from the baseline when Sayre was on a pretty good run getting the game back to three, he pulled up and made a tough fadeaway from about 15 feet on the baseline that kept the Eagles at bay for long enough for the Elks to hold on to win. So both girls' teams are now one game over 500. Sayre's 9-8. The Elkettes 8-7. On the boys' side, Sayre dropped to 10-7. The Elks improved to 6-8. It's a loss for Elk City. On the girls' side, it was a big one because of what's going on playoff wise. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's one of those games that, you know, coming out of a third place finish down in Altus, 4-1 last week. Elk City had won 5 of 6 on the girls' side going into the game last night. You know, you get that one, maybe you can get Blanchard and you're a few over 500 when the records kind of lock in, you know. And then for the Elks, they're creeping back up toward that 500 mark. And how does that help you? Does it keep you out of Kingfisher? You know, quite frankly, where Elk City's been for district the last 2 years, where you didn't want, on the boys' side especially, the last place in the world you wanted to be was at Kingfisher.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, when you're riding around 500, maybe even just a tick above, that really kind of – it looks better, right? When you start comparing records and comparing teams and all that kind of stuff to pair them in the playoffs, it was just a bad loss for the Elkettes last night. And, you know, that maybe that seals their fate going on the road somewhere in that district tournament. But, like I said, Blanchard coming to town Friday night, and then the makeup from the COVID on Saturday over in Weatherford, which you don't get no easier there. As you look up and both,
that's the makeup.
Yeah, the makeup is this Saturday, and then the Elgin makeup is Monday, Valentine's Day, on the 14th. I just found out, by the way, you were asking about places. So next Tuesday, the 1st, Elk City's on the road. Bethany. Well, Bethany had their floor got destroyed,
right,
by water. That game will be at Putnam City North.
Okay.
So on the road at Putnam City North to play Bethany here coming up a week from last night. I just found that out from Coach Hunt. I figured either SNU or somewhere up there. I know they'd been playing a little bit at Putnam City. That's where it's going to be, PC North.
I'm sure they have to alternate what gym's available.
Depending on who's playing. That's right. Yeah. So my guess would be SNU probably has a game that day.
Yeah.
You know, or rough, maybe they
rough
don't like
situation for Bethany, man.
Yeah, it really is.
That's rough.
Hard to get a home court advantage. But it's high school hoops. The brackets were released for Class A and Class B yesterday. Golly, how long you think it's been since Leedy didn't get a bye in the district tournament?
Well,
years and years and years.
Boys did, didn't they?
The boys did, girls
did. The boys
didn't.
Did, the girls did not. But, yeah, mm-hmm. It's not a better question. Another question is how long has it been since they've not hosted a district?
It's been a while.
It's been a
They'll
while.
They'll be at Hammond. Yeah, so the Lady Bison will play at 6:30 Friday the 11th. So 2 weeks from tomorrow, as I mentioned, that's when the or 2 weeks from Friday when playoffs get started. So they'll be playing in that first game. Hammond gets the bye on the girls' side. The boys, you're right. Leedy is moving on. Leedy is into the finals on Friday. You'll have Hammond and Sharon Mutual / Tologa will be there on Friday. You guys, both Canute teams, got the bye into Saturday night. That doesn't surprise me with the records that both teams have.
No, but it's still intriguing in the sense of it's at Burns Flat, and the Burns Flat boys, their stock's going up. They've been very good lately. Canute, I mean, that, and then Canute, they beat them earlier in the year, but it was pretty early in the year to the point, well, I say early for Burns Flat. Canute had played a couple of weeks up to that point, but Burns Flat had gotten off the football field and they were still getting reacclimated into the gym. Now it looks like that process is complete and they're more of a complete team. So, in this being in Burns Flat, so that's going to be a tough one. Advantage, I don't know. But Burns Flat has to play Snyder first, a state tournament team last year. Clearly, they've lost a lot, but they still have to contend with them before they look ahead to protecting their home court against Canute. And Canute, even though they're not hosting a district, they don't have to travel very far to Burns Flat. And, of course, this assures them to be in the regional tournament, and the subside is Burns Flat again. So, you know, and you know Burns Flat would love to play a couple of playoff games in their gym. So it's very intriguing. The boys' side is, anyways.
Yeah, the girls looking ahead out of district. I know – Waiting in that first round of regionals will be Navajo. I talked to Coach Ellison last weekend down at Altus. He was watching his old squad on Thursday. They ended up winning that tournament, the Tri-County down there in at Western Oklahoma State College. Navajo did. So his girls, 18-2, I think it's their record. One loss to Hammond, and I can't remember who they who their other loss was to. But that's a formidable foe, and he was talking about that game and then looking at what's next in a potential regional final. There sets Hydro Weekly waiting on whoever will come out of that sub-site there at Burns Flat on Thursday of the regional tournament. So, it seems the road is pretty tough, and that's in that area. You go to Area 1 and Arapahoe-Butler is the same way. That road is tough, really tough, when you look at what's coming down the pike with Texoma on the boys' side, Sealing on the boys' side, Garber on the boys' side, Laverne, Visai. Whew. Indians and the Lady Indians will earn it if they are to make it into the state tournament again. It's going to be earned because those areas are loaded with good teams. Really high level good teams. So
yeah,
it's you
could really get a pulse for it when I was doing it earlier. I was sitting down and writing the rankings
right
next to all the teams, and we get to an area and you're using more ink than others, and this is one of them. The girls especially, you got, like you said, Sealing and Garber, Drummond, Frontier, Rapo, they're all ranked, and only two can emerge to go to the state. So so they get out of this and get to the state tournament, they've been battle tested.
Absolutely, yeah. It's for real.
I can't forget about Shattuck, Visai. They're now. I mean, I know they're not ranked, but they're always a team.
Yeah, Shattuck,
you better be ready.
I'm telling you right now, the Shattuck boys have played really well in the last couple of weeks.
Man, Shattuck boys and Visai boys in a district doesn't seem fair.
Shattuck's not ranked.
I know this, but it feels like those teams shouldn't be meeting in a district. Maybe a regional.
Well, yeah, I have to meet in a
regional. You see what I'm saying, though?
Well, it's just the product of Shattuck losing a bunch of games early that they probably shouldn't have, or maybe wouldn't now. 10-4. That's not a bad record. They've won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight, including their tournament, in which they beat Visai in the final 56-44. Matter of fact, they beat Visai twice in a week.
Shattuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They beat them 50-41 on the 14th, and then they beat them Saturday 56-44. Yeah.
And then, it's a district at Visai. I mean, so you got the home court stuff going on. That'll be a fun one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, lots of good stuff. As I mentioned, 2A through 4A, this is the last week. The games count.
Yeah.
Or they all count, but they count right toward the playoff pairings. So,
right.
Golly, look at Shattuck's schedule. 2A number 5, Morrison. Class A number 2, Garber. Next two games, Friday and Saturday.
Wow.
Just looking at the bracket a little bit closer. Yeah, Thursdays, February 10th. Very interesting.
I don't know
if I've ever seen that.
I don't think I have either. Maybe by design. Maybe it's ref availability.
Very well could be. Very well could
be. Got to have enough refs for Thursday and Friday and Saturday. So you got some playing Thursday, then they're not playing Friday, then playing Saturday because those refs on Friday are at other districts.
Yeah, I bet you that's part of it is to try to get enough officials out there. You ask, could Arnett get to the state tournament girls' side? Yeah.
I think so.
Watch. Feels like that regional final there is going to be Okeen. Okeen has beat Lomega. It's the only reason
I say
that could be the regional final there at Fairview. That's Saturday night, the 19th.
That's right.
Yeah.
I like Darnett. I know I'd seen him, and I need to stop doing that. Every time I see a team, I go, "Oh, I think they're really good."
Well, most nights Arnett's going to have the best player on the floor.
Yes,
with Brooklyn Bayless.
Yes.
Yeah, Okeen 16-2. They lost to Watonga, and they lost to Oklahoma Bible But as I mentioned, they knocked off Lomega the first game out of the Christmas break. So they've got that one to their credit. And they avenged that loss to Watonga just a night ago.
Hmm.
You know, name the team that's normally good is Burlington. It doesn't look like they're as good this year as some. Well, they're a team that's a state tournament type team a lot of years.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like that's the case this season. They're nowhere to be found in the rankings. Yeah, why not? I wouldn't see why Arnett or O'Keen to go along with Hammond, probably.
Yeah. Hammond looks like a pretty good – they took care of business. Looks like they got a pretty good route to get to the area championship game.
Yeah.
Up in Woodward. The question is, who's going to come out on the other side?
One of those two, I think. Arnett or O'Keen.
I think you're right. Yeah, well, yeah, listen, 2 weeks away. We got a lot of time. All kinds of time to look at this.
Well, and then, of course, we'll have the eight for state.
Yeah.
We always get Dakota to play along. See if we can get somebody else to play along.
I like that.
With both Class A, Class B girls and boys.
I'm all about who's, you know, and it's like any sport when you get to the playoffs, who's hot now.
Oh, yeah. That vaunted momentum that helped Tampa Bay win that playoff game.
Sometimes.
Oh, they didn't win?
Sometimes, even though the rankings are what they are and they have been locked in for, a week and a half now?
Yeah, that's what's really weird is.
You can get some teams that are kind of trending down even though their ranking might be a little deceiving.
That's
right. You got to really pay attention to those scores.
Yeah, because the Class A and B rankings are locked in before even that second tournament week.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, that you can get some trends that develop. It's harder to do that in the other two in 2A through 4A, the other three, just because it's closer to the time. You know, you're talking mm-hmm. about 2 weeks as opposed to a month of what A and B have. NFL football, man, I've been thinking about this since the Chiefs game ended. And when you look around the league, I think there's a clear delineation between the two conferences, meaning the AFC and the NFC. And that delineation is the NFC's best quarterbacks are old dudes. The AFC's best quarterbacks are young dudes.
Right.
You know, there's the four guys that they're going to get mentioned the most often in that group as far as the AFC guys go. Mahomes, 26, Burrow, 25, Herbert, 23, Josh Allen, 25. Those feel like four guys that are going to be where they're at for the long haul, and they're already making big-time waves in the league.
Yes.
At that young, young age.
Yes.
But it's not just them. Lamar Jackson turned 25 2 weeks ago. He's already won an MVP. And when that Ravens squad gets healthy, I mean, they were decimated by injuries, him being one of them down the stretch. I mean, was it the Packers game? I can't remember which game it was where they went for two on the road. No, it was at Pittsburgh where they go for two on the road because they don't have secondary. They don't have any guys left. They're all hurt or got hurt in that game. So watch out. I mean, Ravens, I don't think they're going anywhere. They've locked up John Harbaugh or getting close to doing that for good reason. Derek Carr is only 30, which you think, oh, that's older than the rest of them. But when I tell you the NFC guy's his age, you're going to go, my God, he's a young guy. Baker, 26, everybody's on his case about this year. He was hurt, obviously, with that shoulder that had to get surgically repaired. Just a year ago, he went to Pittsburgh and won a playoff game. So, I mean, he's at least proven something. You've got Trevor Lawrence that most people think at some point is going to be a good player or a star in the league. He's only 22. And you also have a guy which this is such a weird case. I mean, why didn't Deshaun Watson get to play this year? Because there might be charges?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. Why didn't he get to play this year? Is he suspended and the NFL didn't tell anybody?
That's a good question.
I'd really like to know.
A good question.
I mean, I know what's out there as possibilities.
Right.
But there's nothing. There hadn't been any charges filed against him.
Yeah, but as soon as if he were to play, the cancel culture would take over and start screaming from the mountaintop.
What if there's never charges?
I don't know, but this is – I totally understand what you're saying, but I think there are scared individuals who say, I'm not touching this guy or I'll get canceled and I'll lose my job.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Yeah, he didn't. So what you're telling me, he didn't
notice
play.
Nobody's talking about the guy. One way or the other, because I think people are so afraid to get censored or canceled.
So
whatever stance you take with this guy.
So he didn't get to play. What you're saying, essentially, is he didn't get to play because people were scared of the Twitter backlash.
Yes.
Which is unbelievably ridiculous.
That's how it works, man.
And if
it's sad.
He should be able to sue somebody if nothing happened. Like if, anyway. But he's still out there too. That's what just the point of it is, there's that guy.
He's the most intriguing quarterback this offseason where he's going to play next year. Because, you know, as soon as somebody either trades for him or if Houston cut him?
No.
They cut him.
Heck no.
If they cut him and whoever picks him up, what I just said will come to fruition. And they'll say, oh, well, the team that took him, they should be ashamed of themselves. That general manager should be fired. The owner should be reprimanded. Da, 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 da. Give up your season tickets. They just took on this guy who did all this stuff, allegedly.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. I mean, all I know is
guilty before proven innocent.
Yeah,
I mean,
nothing
I'm not defending
happened.
Him. I'm just
I'm not
saying
either.
That's what's.
I just want to know why he didn't play.
Yeah,
he's
still a very capable quarterback.
He's not suspended by the NFL. He's not on the physically unable to perform list or anything like that. But he just didn't play, and I think you're right. I think why is right. But anyway, he's there too. So that's the AFC side. The NFC guys, what you kind of consider the best quarterbacks, right? Brady, 44. Rodgers 38, Matty Ice 36, Wilson, Stafford, and Cousins all 33. Now, part of this, and all the scuttlebutt is that maybe a couple of those guys on that list, on the NFC side, will be headed to the AFC. Now, there's a lot of Rodgers with Denver talk. You know, Pittsburgh is needing a quarterback. Indianapolis. With Wentz, were they happy with that? You know, so, you know, especially Rodgers and Wilson are guys to watch to move to the AFC and join all the rest of those. And, you know, it almost reminds me a little bit of like the West versus the East in the NBA of years past where the West was loaded, but now what's happened? A lot of these stars have gone the other way, and then you look up, well, the East is better than the West. Mm-hmm. How did that happen? Oh, I know, LeBron Durant and Harden, and a handful of those guys went from west to east and changed the balance of power. There's two teams in the NFC that have every opportunity moving forward to not necessarily make, say, a Patriots type go to 9 Super Bowls in 20 years. I'm not saying that, but they have a chance, and they're positioned better than anybody else in the NFC because they have already seemingly acquired or drafted, both did draft, a young franchise quarterback. What two pop to your mind when I say that?
In the NFC?
In the NFC.
Man. I keep going to the young guys in the AFC. I can't think. You're going to have to help me.
Arizona,
okay, yeah.
And Dallas. Dak Prescott, 28. Kyler Murray, 24. Seem to be way better positioned with youth at the quarterback spot and not uncertainty at the quarterback spot versus anybody else in the NFC.
Yeah.
I mean, think about how much different the NFC looks to start next year if Brady's done, Rodgers is in Denver, and Russell Wilson is quarterback in the Colts. Who's left?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's some young guys that have been drafted into the NFC that we don't know about yet. Trey Lance could be something at San Francisco.
Yeah.
Justin Fields at Chicago. Sure, there's another one I'm forgetting off the top of my head right now. But Dak and Kyler appear to be those guys. You know, can Stafford hang on for more than a year or two? I mean, the Rams are in cap hell because they're trying to win now. How can they reformulate that thing back around to try to do it again? Who knows? But, you know, I know Dallas has a bunch of free agents that they're going to, you know, make choices on or what have you. But it appears to me, just at least with the quarterback spot, the most important, as we saw this last weekend, the most important position in sports is the quarterback in the NFL. And when you have one of those guys, incredible things can happen. And it feels to me like the AFC, a bunch of those teams have that figured out. And if they don't, they're about to try to fix it, short fixes with some older guys that are come from NFC to AFC. So Dallas and Arizona seem to have gotten it figured out early. Now can they take advantage of it? We've seen Kyler and Cliff flop at the end of every season they've been together. Cliff Kingsbury has flopped at the end of every season he's ever coached. If you go back to his Texas Tech days, you know, Dallas had Dak did what he did. You know, there's still, even though it feels like it's a stable situation with two pretty good quarterbacks, for both of those teams, there's still some question marks surrounding them. So they have to get that figured out because there is a chance for both of those teams to really go on a pretty good run in the NFC because of the lack of the youthful, strong quarterbacks that the AFC clearly possesses.
Yeah, that's an opportunity for them. You'd like to see them go on a run because they're a good team going up against other good teams and winning. But, hey, a win's a win, I guess. Success is success no matter how you get it. Those are established there. You just hope that front office can make some good moves around them. Smart moves around them financially. Not sure that's happening in Dallas.
We'll find out. This is a great chance to prove that it is. And here's another reason. What happened yesterday in New Orleans? Sean Payton stepping away. He's still going to be kind of under contract / controlled by New Orleans. And so it's not like you can just out and out just sign him for nothing. You're going to have to supply New Orleans with some sort of compensation if you want to acquire Sean Payton to be the head coach. Is there a Dallas Cowboys fan out there that can make the argument that shouldn't happen? And I want to hear it. Because to me, it is an absolute no-brainer. You can fix two problems. You can kill two birds with one stone. With one simple trade that Drew texted us yesterday, and it makes 1,000,000% sense. It helps cap problems, and it gets Sean Payton to be your head coach instead of Mike McCarthy. And that is trade Amari Cooper to New Orleans for Sean Payton. You don't have to trade picks, which are going to be valuable as heck coming forward because it's cheap labor. And some of the contracts you've doled out, Amari Cooper's being one of them, that are off the books.
Yeah.
And you know who probably needs a guy like Amari Cooper? The Saints, because Michael Thomas, who knows?
Yeah, I'm hearing that
Who knows? Health, you know, he kind of ruined the season for himself by waiting to have that surgery way too long. And then didn't play, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that works there for them. Now they're in a little bit of cap problem too. They're way over the cap, but those things can be alleviated. But that for on the Cowboys side of it anyway, that makes total sense. And then you drop Zeke, and all of a sudden, now things are looking better on the cap front, even though you're already paying. And here's the thing: I know that once you have to start paying your quarterback those big dollars, which Dallas did, then you lose certain guys. That just comes with the territory. Now, how bad would it really hurt your feelings if you lost Cooper and Zeke with the overinflated money that they were making when you've got what you've got still there at the receiver spot on next to nothing contracts, and if you get rid of Cooper, you can keep Gallup at a way less number? And is their production really that much different?
Yeah, and if you need to supplement the loss of Zeke, it's not hard to find a running back late in the draft who can develop into something that what Zeke did this past couple of seasons and still get paid way, way less, especially on a rookie contract.
Drew's saying there's not an out until 2023 for Zeke. Who cares? You can't just – well, you just cut him and you take the loss. I know it's dead money or what have you, but he's useless.
Yeah,
he's literally useless. When you watch, he's useless.
Absolutely agree.
And especially at that number.
I'm just trying not to go down this rabbit hole of this actually being a thing of Sean Payton coming to Dallas. It excites me, yes, but I don't want to get overexcited.
He sure didn't seem, when you kind of looked at him, he sure didn't seem like a guy that was going to coach next year. He looked older than 58.
Yeah.
You know, like it's kind of wore on him. And maybe that's just the function of having Jameis Winston and then Taysom Hill as your quarterbacks. and
have
at the
to
number
constantly
that,
figure out how to make that work
right
offensively. Yes, and that's not a knock on Hill, but he's not your
he's not a quarterback.
Quarterback.
He's not a $100 million quarterback.
Exactly, but he's got to figure out, okay, I got to run these quarterback draws. Got to find a way to do that and keep him on the field. Oh, now I got to throw it with them. I could see where that could be very, very stressful week in, week out, preparing for games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, he, you know, would it be more comfortable for him? And that's a big ask because you're coming to America's team with the most, I won't say ruthless owner, GM, but he's always has his hand in things. I mean, would he be trading one stressful situation for another?
See, Jerry's interesting because he ain't getting no younger.
Yeah.
And so, but how does that motivate him? Does that motivate him to press harder himself? Or does he kind of take a step back and go, wait a minute, I'm 80 whatever years old. If the best chance for me to win before I die is to let my football people do it.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like Jerry Jones' way.
No, it doesn't.
It hasn't been.
He probably feels like if he's not there making the phone calls, eating his McGriddles, and not involved, then he's not worthy of celebrating with the rest of them when they win a championship. But that's far from the case. The owners have all the right to celebrate. You know, they're the ones signing the checks and everything. He has to learn to let that go.
Well, and that's the thing. He'll still get credit for stepping away.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he would.
But is it the credit that he wants?
No, I don't know. It's a long text on the text line.
Basically, there's a period before the season starts. Dakota and Drew are way bigger salary cap dorks than I am. There's no doubt about that. I don't. But Dakota is disagreeing with Drew.
Oh, man.
That you can split the dead cap space, $10 million one season, $10 million the other for the $20 million that's left. Mm. So both technically right. That there's not necessarily an out this year to get it out of money, but you could split it, 10 one time, 10 the other. Same thing Kansas City did with Eric Berry when he got hurt. Whatever, whatever it is.
I think at the end of the day, yes, Sean Payton would be an upgrade at head coach.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
That's a given. But again, is it a pipe dream? I haven't heard.
Is it a year away?
Right. You know, or structurally, do they have to wait another year to make it work? Does he want a break?
That
was my first question when it came down that he was stepping away. So, was he quitting or is he retiring?
He actually,
but retiring, does that even mean anything anymore?
Well,
everyone comes out of retirement.
He said he didn't like that word. Period. Yesterday.
Okay.
But
I didn't hear
it. Is that a one-year hiatus? Does he do TV for a year? Recharges his batteries? I mean, that's a phrase that everybody uses at times like that when they really don't want to be done, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they're the general manager. That's right. Mickey Loomis.
Hmm.
Are they a package deal, and is there a spot? I mean, but all this is so easily fixed if Sean Payton – really wants to coach the Dallas Cowboys this year. All these things can be done and do them. I mean, that's the surely to goodness with all the moves and all the craziness that's happened in Jerry Jones's time. I mean, there's always been that underlying rumor of an infatuation with Sean Payton dating back to his time that he spent in Dallas under Bill Parcells before he ever went to New Orleans in 2006. Right?
Right.
There's always been kind of that underlying, hey, could that, you know, get the band back together type of situation with him being the head coach. And so if that's true, which I kind of think it is, then doesn't it feel to me that Jerry Jones would to do anything in his power to make that happen now that it can? Well, so what I'm saying is, if it doesn't happen, I think it's purely because Sean Payton didn't want to do it and wanted to take some time away. Because when you look, even though there's 9 jobs technically open, one of which he just left to make it 9, none of those offer you what the Dallas Cowboys would.
Yeah.
And you can fix some of the cap stuff by getting Cooper out of there and fix a lot of the game management stuff from the sidelines, getting Sean Payton in there. It makes a lot of sense. It just may not be happening until we may be talking about it this time next year.
Right.
But that's the dumb part of it, though. For the Cap, why waste another year of what you've got on that roster? Because Mike McCarthy, we know what his stripes are. We've seen it year after year after year after year. He doesn't manage games properly at the end. No matter who his quarterback is. He's had Rodgers and he's had Dak.
Yeah.
And he still screws it up.
Yeah.
So why even go through the charade of another year unless Sean Payton just simply doesn't want to do it?
That's the first question. That's the first question. Does he even want to do it?
Right. And he, of anybody, he knows what a year off gives him because he had the 2012 season off because of Bounty Gate.
Exactly.
So maybe he gets refreshed. A little bit of breaking news in the college football ranks. It looks like Oklahoma State has found their next defense coordinator, according to Bruce Feldman, if he puts it out there in the coaching carousel, you can pretty well book it. Former Auburn defense coordinator Derek Mason expected to accept the offer to become the defensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. Mason's defense ranked number 4 in the SEC this past year, fewest yards per play allowed there at Auburn. So Derek Mason looks to be leaving Auburn for Oklahoma State to replace Jim Knowles as Mike Gundy's defensive coordinator. That's a name that popped up a couple of weeks ago in that coaching search, and it looks like that's going to be the guy. So Derek Mason is expected to accept the offer for Mike Gundy to be the defense coordinator at Oklahoma State. Staying in the college football, you see the news yesterday. All of a sudden, a new team
yeah.
had popped up in the Caleb Williams saga.
Yes.
And that was Wisconsin.
Okay. That's Wisconsin. What you think of when you think of quarterback play. I guess they've needed a quarterback ever since Russell Wilson.
Well, that's kind of the angle I was going to take with this. Is it's interesting because Russell Wilson moving from North Carolina State to Wisconsin is kind of the one that got all this ball rolling. You remember when he was the first grad transfer type guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
like the first famous one for sure.
Yeah,
you know
I remember thinking, oh, well, this is a nice story. He's having a successful 1 year at Wisconsin,
right.
And then the rest is history.
Yeah, 10 years ago or whatever it was, 2010, I think, was the season where he was at Wisconsin.
But here's the thing about Wisconsin, and if this is true and if whatever, the big reason why he is leaving or wants to find another place is to find the best place to develop him as a quarterback for the NFL. Okay, outside of Russell Wilson, who else is Wisconsin giving the NFL?
I understand that, but at the same time, you know what they do? They run a pro-style offense.
They do.
They don't run the air raid Lincoln Riley stuff.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They're under center, play action, a lot of what you see on Sundays, outside of maybe the Chiefs, you know?
Right.
So I think it makes a lot of sense because of that. Now, one of their family friends – it's expected to be named the offensive coordinator coming from
there
the Ravens in that,
yeah.
that area.
Yeah.
And so that's maybe what gives Wisconsin the leg up. But if that is the move, then I don't think anybody can pick at the list of things he said he was looking for. And developing into an NFL prospect and draft pick was at the top of the list.
Right.
You know, and this is a different idea than what he's been, what he was recruited to in the offense he was recruited to run and wanted to run at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley. Now, having all that having been said, I'll believe it when I see it that he's not at USC.
Yeah, I think it's still USC.
I mean, and the one reason I say that is because Mario Williams has made it known that he has a package deal with Caleb Williams wherever he goes. And he's already there, you know?
Right.
So until it's not USC, I'm still going to think it's USC. What about the Hall of Fame? Are you up? Are you outraged with any of the Baseball Hall of Fame stuff? It's weird. There are people that really are, and there's a bunch of people that aren't. Where do you stand?
I'm not outraged. I'm not. I've always been on the stance of if you cheated the game, you don't deserve to get in Cooperstown. I know I'm in the minority when I say that. Maybe I'm not. I don't know. Everything I see is, no, Bonds didn't get in. Clemens didn't get in. I'm sorry. The PED stuff stands out to me. They cheated the game, and I'll go one extra. I don't think Pete Rose should ever get in either. I don't think he should. You know what I mean? I'm a purist at heart when it comes to baseball. They did not play the game purely.
What about this one? With the guy that did get in.
I'll plead ignorance. I didn't see the list.
David
I was
Ortiz.
So busy yesterday.
David Ortiz is the only one that was elected.
Yeah.
Well, he's on a list.
Yeah.
Of testing positive for this stuff.
Yeah.
So I think the people that didn't.
And I don't agree with it then. I don't agree. He should have got in either.
The people that voted. It's clear the difference between him and those other guys you mentioned. He was nice. He was nice to the media. And they voted for him.
Did him giving that speech after the Boston Marathon.
Sure. All that stuff
definitely
helps.
You see what I'm saying? He was always like the face of – he wasn't just the face of the Boston Red Sox. He was the face of Boston for a brief time, right? Like the face of strength after that tragedy. So is he getting in on that?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's getting in because he was one of the most clutch hitters of all time. And he was nice to the media. I mean, think about in the annals of baseball, who are the two of the biggest jerks that all the writers talk about? Bonds and Clemens. And now they can use their dislike for him with the PED stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not defending him. I'm with you. But here's the problem, though. You don't know for sure. And so now all you're doing is speculating, and then that allows your personal bias to drip into these votes. And the problem for those two, especially Bonds and Clemens, they were Hall of Famers way before they cheated. Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before his head grew 8 sizes out in San Francisco because he saw McGuire and Sosa cheating. And he thought, you know what? I'm better than them. If they're going to cheat, I am too, and watch this.
Right.
But they made that choice.
That never makes sense to me if anything. Who did we say that to? Oh, it was the Houston Astros. They didn't need to cheat. They were such a good, well-put-together team. They didn't need to cheat, but they did it anyways. That can be said right here with those two. They didn't have to do that or allegedly have to do that.
Mm-mm. No, they were going to be in the Hall of Fame.
They were going – yeah. But the PED stuff still stands out, always will. And I'll
now,
think anyone who
– let me ask you this. I know what you're saying. But could you make the case, and I think I could very strongly actually – that those guys that did that saved baseball.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Coming out of the strike, the World Series didn't happen in 1994.
Yeah.
Did those guys save the game of baseball?
Yeah.
By those just capturing the imagination of baseball fans again in the summer of 98 with the home run chase between McGuire and Sosa. And then that led to Bonds.
There is an argument for that. It made for entertaining baseball, for sure.
Yeah, it did. It certainly did.
Yeah.
I just think if you're going to put in one, which they did yesterday with Ortiz did it. Even though he denies it, he literally tested positive for it.
Right.
Then you have to put them all in.
Right.
Or don't put any of them in. But then the speculation goes... I mean, there's almost nobody outside of maybe Derek Jeter that is completely clean of this, and who knows if he did or not. We'll be back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.